make sure we're reading.
Charles. Charles Chuck.
Cheese nips.
Hello. Chester. Hello.
Got her, dude. First try. IT guy's freaking whiz. Who needs AI?
I
do. Hey, AI?
Hey.
Alien intelligence.
It stands for arsenal insemination.
Arsenio Hall?
Something? Arsenio insemination.
It's two words. Well, with that, welcome back to yet another episode of American Dudocracy. Chilling in the honey hut. Dave-o, Mayor Dave. Dude.
Hola.
I'm smoking a log over here, buddy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a pretty big limb.
Yeah. Cheers, man.
Need a chainsaw to get that thing ready to go.
That's how they cut them?
Yeah.
Might need a permit for this in Colorado.
Right.
What about you, Kamikaze?
You know what? I am doing a tabac especial. Did I say that right? Especial.
Yes, we are not all smoking the same one, yeah, so it's going to be hard to grade today.
Yeah, it is hard to grade.
We're from Western Colorado. Yeah. It's an especial.
Especial.
It's an E special.
Oh, it's electronic.
An E special.
Yeah, yeah. It's like an E. It's like a vape. It's an E smoke, E stogie.
An E special. Well, I guess note to future, right? If we're going to grade our cigars, we probably need to be all smoking the same thing, huh? But hey, it'll be relative.
Yeah, suckers.
I would like to introduce my son-in-law.
Hello.
This is Roger Dodger Dalton. And he was given that name because it just fits. I mean, he's an ex-Marine like Matt. And before we started the podcast, those two were going at it, reliving their heroism in the military. So we thank him for that, of course, but it's always nice to have my son here. So
nope, thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome, dude. Yeah, I don't know about reliving heroism, more like discussing dipshittery.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the few, the proud, the crayons.
Yeah.
The stacking people and acting like jackasses.
Yeah. Oh yeah, long days on the flight line.
Yeah, it's pretty funny, dude, the air wing. So I'll just jump in a little bit. So working on aircraft in the Marine Corps in particular. So everybody, like, I wanted a job. So when I got out, I could translate into something, right? So rather than just go shoot stuff. And then when I got out, I would go to jail for shooting stuff. So a little planning on my part. But that being said, like the whole view of the flight line in the Marine Corps is like, oh, laid back air winger, kicky, cushy. Oh, it must be nice. But dude, the hours that you put in are freaking insane.
Yeah, people underestimate it for sure.
Yeah.
Especially summertime, because for whatever reason, you can't do any kind of testing flights without daylight. So summer, I mean, you're working 12, 13, 14 hour days, depending if you're doing vibration analysis for the testing of the main rotors and whatnot. So,
okay. So it's a maintenance portion, not the actual flight line guiding.
As far as the vibanel,
your position, what you did.
Oh no, I was maintenance.
Okay. Maintenance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, here, I'll just start out. I was a 6114, which is a, Huey and Cobra, flight line mechanic. They have different shops. They break it down into, you know, everyone has a different role. Flight line kind of has majority, I would say, as far as they take care of flight controls, main rotor, tail rotor, anything that has to do with fuel, engines, APU. And usually they take care of the FOD program, and they take control over flight line and the whole marshalling outside. So they kind of run the flight line as far as that.
Okay. Because I did the civilian half of that, the latter half of that, the guy marshal, you know, the the FBO, fixed base operations at private airports. And
very nice.
I did direct some military jets in there, though.
Yeah, I bet that's fun.
Fueled them up, and oh yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. So, even I like when you get those people coming into those airports, it's fun to talk with them and where they're from, and mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always cool.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, well, that's cool. Any good stories from
grab the like, Air Force oh, yeah, guys plenty. And noogies?
Yeah.
Hey, actually, my other son-in-law is Air Force. He's the drone pilot.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He flies the Reaper.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he flies the MQ-9.
There you go. Well, Huey's. Were you four blade? You worked on four blades then.
So I actually was a plane captain on the Whiskey two blade Cobra. So and then we moved on to the four blade after that. So.
Yeah, so you were the Zulu AH-1Z. Yep. Me too. I was an AH-1Z and a Yankee. Or November, I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah, so you had the old Huey.
Yeah, the old Huey, okay. Which isn't really the old Huey. The J model Huey was there. They were transitioning to the November when I was in.
Oh, okay.
And which meant dual motors, blah, blah, blah. Like, still a few, not many. But yeah, same. Dude, the same aircraft, okay, from the Korean War through Vietnam. Through present day, they just keep adding a little more horsepower. That kind of redneck ingenuity,
engines,
right?
Here and there.
Here's some more juice.
Yeah. And a lot of them are still the same, like November frame, and they just retrofitted it and everything. So, no, yeah. I love Hueys. I love Cobras. And,
well, aviation doesn't, that's just an aviation FAA thing, right? That doesn't change. The civilian version, because I'm more the civilian airplane head, but the airplane, the engines. It's like a 1950s design that they're still using now, right? It just it's so hard to get anything approved through the FAA on certain things that it's like, might as well just keep the old one and just keep modifying it and tweaking a little bit here and there and get more horsepower out of it.
Yeah, the military is even worse about trying to get stuff updated.
I bet.
And on top of that, the Marine Corps is even the last line of that too, I'd say.
Yeah, the way the budget works for the Marine Corps is that's where the Department of the Navy comes in. So the Marine Corps, they are expected to be ready at all times to fight, first to fight, right? Last to know, first to go at the beck and call. And readiness, 100% readiness all the time, and they don't even have their own freaking budget. The Navy's like, well, we got a little leftover, so we're going to give it to the Marine Corps. Kind of, you know what I mean? Like, they don't have their own deal, so they're definitely like the lowest portion of that giant spending bill that we talk about all the time that we tell you there's a lot of waste in. So
they got pop guns.
No, we've got the real guns.
Oh, okay.
They're just from like World War II. My M16A2 that I qualified and kept the entire time I was in the Marine Corps. Of course, you know, as you get stationed, you don't know if you get the same weapon twice, right? Because you go qualify once a year. But mine was like M16A2, dude. Open sights, iron sights, like from back in the day still. They've upgraded since then. I think they have like ACOGs and stuff now, right?
Yeah, we got, they call them RCOs, I think. But yeah, it's just a Trichicon ACOG.
Kind of cool, man. They're light years ahead of where I was when I was in not so long ago.
Hmm.
Another jarhead. Watch out. You're in trouble now. Trouble now.
We're almost outnumbered, Dave.
Oh. Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, the Department of the Navy, the men's department.
Yes, sir.
That's what it is.
I like that. That's funny.
But dude, helicopters are cool, man. You know, a brick with a propeller, what could go wrong?
Yep.
So it's pretty good, man. I'll tell you what, one of the coolest things I did when I was in is I got to do spy rigging. We had a family day.
Nice.
And I got to actually do it. You know, they picked us up on basically dropped a rope out with like five carabiners on the deal. And we were in harnesses and we clipped off to a carabiner and they picked us up dangling below the helicopter and flew away with us. So there are five of us.
Holy smokes.
Hanging on a rope below the helicopter. We got to do it a couple times. It was practice day and then show day, you know, and on show day, it was all super foggy. It was pretty cool, actually.
Oh, yeah.
You're flying through the air and you got to keep your arms and legs kind of out of the side because if you tuck one side, you spin. And if you start spinning and there's people below you, then everybody's pissed off.
You piss them all off. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And you were able to do that as a mechanic?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I got to actually participate in that. That was, we fast roped in and did some stuff. Then they came in and picked us up and evacuated us. It was pretty cool, man.
Yeah. I missed that because they had an Okinawa deployment. I was on a Mew, which is a deployment on a ship with the Navy. But I was on a Mew, and the other half of our squadron was on a UDP to Okinawa. But yeah, my buddies were sending me pictures, and they were on a family day. They were able to front seat Cobras, front seat Hueys, and do Spy. And I'm like, dude, seriously? So I missed out on that one. Man.
I never got to front seat a Cobra. I got to my maintenance CO, Major. His name is Major Howard. He let me play around on a Huey one time.
Mm-hmm.
Flying, he's like, "Ever get any stick down?" I'm like, "No, sir." He's like, "Come on up here." I'm like, "Holy shit!"
Nice.
Like, get us up pretty high, because I'm just really, case. And I had like, I don't know, maybe 4 to 5 seconds of stick time before I had it so messed up. He's like, "Yeah, get your ass in the back." Yeah. Like, yes, sir. That's I'm gonna sit back down now.
Are we gonna make it?
Yeah.
Helicopters are fun. I flew a R Robinson R. SR-20, not an SR-22.
Should just be
a R-22.
Yeah, R-22.
Yeah, there's SR, a Sirius airplane.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're fun. There was this guy that was just building time. So he bought a little R-22. It's a piston.
Okay, yeah.
Piston engine. And he flew the paint off that thing.
Briggs and Stratton.
I think I can.
Make sure you choke her.
But he used to come back with hay, like on the landing gear.
Oh, okay.
I was like, what are you doing, man? Landing on hay bales? He's just out 8 hours a day building time.
Right
just
on.
Whatever, just dinking around. So he took me up a couple times and... Yeah, let me fly it, and like, dang, he's got a piece of string out in front. That's where his that's a, you know.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I forget what the call. I just watched a video on that too. It's just like a directional thing.
Yeah, that just indicates tells you if you need your rudder or not.
Helps
yeah.
you more with your tail rotor for flight. So
if the string goes left, push the left pedal.
Yeah,
keep the string in the middle. It's just the wind.
Yeah,
blows it up, and mm-hmm. if you're not flying straight, it'll direct the right.
So you're not, yeah. So you're not fighting against it, yeah.
I don't know how those work in the rain, though.
I don't know. Right?
Like, you got a big fan
sideways.
Above you. Yeah, you got a big fan above you. It stays dry.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Just don't fly that little helicopter in the rain. Be good.
So did you get a play? You got to actually so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, flying a plane versus a helicopter. Explain how it acts. Helicopter
is so cool. You can just hover. Now that little thing it was kind of hard with two people in it, especially. But yeah, it was way cool. I really enjoyed that. The only part, it was a struggle because, man, you had to really stay on it. You know, the bigger ones are a little more. But this one, man, if you let go of the cyclic or the collective, I mean, you got to like really be on it the whole time.
Oh, really?
So it seemed to be a lot more like with an airplane, man, I trimmed that thing out. And yeah. I could look in the back, but, you know, get a book. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it just wants to fly. Helicopters.
Especially if you have autopilot or something, it's really easy. But yeah. that was the takeaway I had was, man, you really got to like fly this thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, dang, it takes, you got to have skill.
Yeah, it's hard to explain. Like I would call it the difference between like a plane, like driving a car, use momentum, you turn the wheel, you know, you kind of go, but a helicopter is kind of more like a unicycle. Like it can tip and fall in every single direction at all times.
Yep.
And you have to keep it from falling directly out of the sky and keep it the right elevation. Cause if you, like when you first pick up, the blades and everything flex so hard because they tilt and the air pressure pushes down and it picks up the actual aircraft, right? So your collective, you turn your collective up, which pitches your blades. So as it comes up, if you don't slow the collective down, you just keep rising up into the sky at like an accelerated rate, right? So everything you put in, you have to take out. Dude, yeah. I suck. I say that because conceptually I understand, but physically, don't ever ride with me. I won't ever ride with myself. So, be the shortest ride ever.
Yeah.
So then I actually worked at Papillon Helicopters in the Grand Canyon, the town of Grand Canyon, Arizona. And that's where they actually flew down to the Havasupai Indian, down in the canyon, right? There's this Indian tribe, and they had one of their flight packages where you can actually go down and stay at this Havasupai reservation for a day, and they come back and pick you up. So the pilot, that he needed some extra weight in there, and they fly right seat for help. It's backwards.
Right, with, right seat.
Yeah, right seat. So I jumped in the left seat, and he took me down the canyon. So that just to pick people up, right? I was the guy marshaling in the back and loading up the passengers, making sure they're buckled in and everything. And this has been before college, but yeah, I got to fly down there in the canyon and the helicopter.
That was awesome.
And that was a Bell 206.
Oh, nice.
So now we're talking turbine. Way better, way smoother flight.
Now, I was going to mention, because you were talking about flying in the canyons or whatever, I had like 2 years left on my 5-year contract, and I actually put in a package to fly as an AO, an aerial observer. So I flew as a door gunner for the last 2 years, and I think it was Yuma, and we went down to, we stopped in Havasu, and we were just ripping down the Colorado River at, I bet you we were probably, I don't know, 150, 200 feet above. And I mean, just following the river and just yanking and banking. People are down there kayaking and looking up, and I mean, throwing my hands out, waving at everyone. And if you haven't flown in a helicopter before, especially like in Hueys, I mean, you're flying doors open. It is just nothing but, I mean, it's like people love riding Harleys out in the wind, like getting a Huey doors wide open. I mean, that's just freedom right there. It's amazing.
So I did that with the Long Ranger, and I also did that with an airplane, though, because that's what I used to do in Montana. Was I used to fly, it wasn't a Grand Canyon, but they had a canyon where wasn't the Yellowstone, there's a river in Bozeman, the Madison, pretty decent sized river, and I flew it a bunch, so I knew exactly where the power line crossings were, because it's not like a legit thing to
you gotta keep your eyes peeled,
those darn lines.
I call it just pod racing from that Star Wars. So that's what you're doing, right? You're in a canyon, basically. No,
absolutely, yeah.
So you come into it and you're hauling. Because with airplane, the catch is airspeed.
You can't stall. You got to go.
Well, helicopters, yeah, you're kind of screwed. But with airplanes, your safety is your speed, right?
Yep.
Especially my little Cessna 150, a little two-seater. So you come in as fast as you can. I'm going like 100. So some of these, man, you have to really get banking and...
Yeah.
By the time you come out of that one and roll over to the other one, and and if something were to happen, you just pull up, right? And that's how your emergency plan is. You just pull up and you're already at 400 feet like that.
Get above it. Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of fun. No, that, yeah. Times,
hence the that's awesome. Kamikaze name.
Mm-hmm. Huh? Oh, such a good time. Such a good time.
Yeah, I totally agree. I got to fly back from Yuma when we were down there doing WTI, and I came back WTI. With the same maintenance same maintenance officer, and we came back through the sand dunes, dude, and he was, I don't know, we weren't very high off the ground.
Yeah,
he was ripping, and that was the coolest thing ever, dude.
It is insane.
It was just like feet hanging out the side, just just ripping.
It's just like, yeah, whenever you get to go fly like that, especially in the Marine Corps, it just felt like it's like no rules. It's like, this is amazing. Like, this is what I thought the Marine Corps was going to be like the whole time. And you finally get to experience that, and you're like, oh, okay, this is best job in the world right here.
Yeah. That,
it's awesome.
1.5 hour flight, 5 years worth of labor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know if it's quite worth it with all that.
And all that good pay.
All that great pay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Got paid at least $1.35 an hour.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. When that thing.
Yeah, we did that for fun. You calculate it by the hour, just because of how many crazy hours you work. And you're like, wow, that's not a lot.
You got a lot of free shooting.
Hey, but you have free.
I got to shoot a lot of rounds.
Free bullets.
Right. Oh yeah, good times, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Marine Corps is. So, did you go on the 11th MEU then?
I went on the 13th MEU. Yeah. So this one's a little bit different, because usually it's like East Coast guys usually get Europe and like the Mediterranean. This one, 13th MEU, we left out of San Diego, and we actually went all the way to Spain. I don't know. It was just an oddball one, I guess. It was my first MEU, my second deployment. I did UDP to Okinawa before that. So we went from California. We hit Hawaii, obviously. That's your first and last spot. But let's see, Singapore, India, Sri Lanka, Djibouti, Oman, and then went through the Suez Canal, got up into the Med, went to Italy, went through Gibraltar, went into Spain, and then came back. We came back all the way around, three quarters of the way. We were trying to see if we can go the short way and just continue on and go through the that other canal, South America. What is that?
Panama.
And Panama. But no, we ended up not doing that one. So we just went all the way back.
Wow.
But that one, we were lucky on that one because it was pretty much steady, no longer than 30 days at sea without hitting a port. So it wasn't bad. I enjoyed it.
Did you go to Morocco when you were at the...
No, we hung out off the coast just because Morocco is kind of here and there sometimes.
Yeah.
So we were there, but...
That's awesome.
Because what's Libya? Libya is the other one that's kind of spicy up there. Man.
Yeah.
But nothing ever happens. So.
See, that to me would be a huge perk, right? Like, I've never seen that much of the world. Dave, have you?
No. Like, I've been to Loma. Way.
I was drove down to Mac once in a while.
My turn to talk about Loma.
Yeah. Let me talk about my travels, okay? Yeah. Just listen up. This won't take long.
There's some prairie dog towns down there.
Yeah.
Wreaked havoc with. No. That's awesome.
That is.
That's cool that you mentioned that you're like, oh yeah, I wanted to have something that was transferable into the civilian world, and I was able to go get my AMP and then I still work on airplanes. So yeah, that definitely got me into that. So
you do still work?
I do. Yep. Okay. Work on airplanes still. Yeah. I went and worked on just little recips down at the airport.
Okay.
For D&T Avionics. Familiar with them? Uh-uh. Small shop. And then I actually just went contracting. And that was a deployable one. So I went to a couple other places like that too.
Because maintenance activities right now are in high demand.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking to buy, I owned an airplane for a long time and I'm looking to get back into a fractional ownership and it's tough.
Yeah.
Getting mechanics.
Yes.
Are you looking to get your IA eventually too?
Yeah. So I'm eligible. And then this place that I just got hired on with, I was like, hey, you know, I'm eligible for my IA. Do you want me to get it? And he was like, they're a repair station, so they don't need it. He's like, we don't use our IAs here. So if you want to go get it, you can do it on your own. But he's like, you're not going to use it here. So I was okay.
Well, still get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That will, your value will go way up.
Yeah, for sure.
So just we're kind of nerding out a little bit on this. So A&P mechanic, it's a airframe and power plant, A&P mechanic. You're able to work on airframes and power plants, right? And then the IA, I forget what the IA stands
Inspection
for.
Authorization.
So that's the guy who actually signs the logbooks. You hear about logbooks, yeah, pilot logbook, but this is your airplane, your aircraft has its own logbook as well, right? So you keep track on everything, any maintenance issues done. That's across the board, right? I'm sure the military is the same way, right?
Yeah, and surprisingly enough, I think it's weird to think, but civilian side, it's a lot more Wild West, so to speak. The military is so like ABC, Barney style. And then civilian world, you get out there and you start working on stuff and you're like, so what do I need to do? And it's just more, figure it out.
Oh, as far as books, like an SOP for replacing a part?
Oh, man. Especially a lot of these planes that you work on are built in like the 60s, you know, a lot of the Cessnas and stuff, 50s, 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And you go look at the tech data or the maintenance manual because they're all big about that on the military. Making sure that you have your tech data out. But like I did a turbo on a 182, I believe. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go look this up, make sure I get all the, I was looking for the torques of all the fasteners. And the instructions were remove turbocharger, reinstall in reverse order. And that's all it said. And I'm like, oh, okay. Cool.
Oh,
thanks.
Yeah. So, YouTube.
Yeah. How do
I? Which the MIMS in the Marine Corps, or at least in the military and the Marine Corps, the MIMS are the exact opposite of that. They're like A to B to C to D, double A, triple B.
Oh, man, it's painful.
All the way down. And it's everything has a torque. You don't memorize any torques. Every time you're torquing something, you got to open the book, verify, blah, blah, blah.
Nice.
Like, there's this whole process. And that is one thing that they do. They're very over the top with it, right? Which is good.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
Yep.
But it's incredible. There's a lot of information flowing through a squadron in maintenance. You know, you don't, as you get kind of, as you move your way up, right? So I got out as a CDQAR.
Same.
And I did not get my AMP license. I didn't pursue it. I went into the oil field as the worm because I like getting beat on and starting over. So, but it's a cool process, man. And there's a lot of quality assurance stuff through there that a lot of people don't understand. Like, you can't just whip your plane into Grease Monkey and
exactly,
you know, throw well, the receipts on the dash.
So from the owner's perspective, I can do a lot, because with airplane, there's certain maintenance, that certain activities that trip maintenance, right? So if you're, for me, if I'm flying part 10 or part 91, so just general aviation, I have to get my airplane inspected every year. It's called an annual inspection. So every 12 calendar months, I have to go in and tear the whole plane apart. There's inspection panels you need to remove to look at the whatever you're looking at behind it, the cables, everything. And as the owner, I can actually remove all the panels. I can't do the inspection. The IA or the AMP has to do that, because they're signing the logbook, not me, right? But then I can put it all back together. I could change the oil, change the tire, stuff like that. And then if you're flying commercially, now you're part 61 FAA, and that, it's like a 100-hour thing. So if you fly the aircraft for 100 hours, then you have to take it in and do a, basically an annual inspection equivalent every 100 hours. Is the military roughly the same for maintenance there?
The military doesn't have to follow any kind of annual program, I don't think. So they just have whatever. I believe that the military goes it over, but the manufacturer will give out an interval or a maintenance plan, and then the military usually takes that and does the inspections more frequently than they need to be done. So just to be extra safe. But and you were talking about for the annuals and the IA, that's the one thing that is nice for IAs, is that they are the only ones that can sign off annuals. Mm-hmm. So an AMP can do all the work. He can, you know, hey, this is broken, replace this, take everything off. But the actual inspection itself needs to be signed off by the IA, and then the AMP can go, because an AMP, you can remove and replace an entire engine. You know, if it's bolt on, bolt off, and it's manufactured, hey, this is the engine that's supposed to go in there, AMP can sign that off, and an IA doesn't ever have to look at that. But yeah, the annual part is where you have to have an IA, and yeah, it gets very expensive too.
Oh yeah.
Annuals are scary.
Yeah, they sure can be. I had a whole bunch, and sorry, we're nerding out here on the flight stuff. But,
yeah.
Yeah, we'll get into the drinking and fighting here in no time.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah.
The brawl.
So yeah. I owned an airplane for 13 years, and the first year it was just a Cessna 150, a little two seater, had 100 horsepower, Continental IL 200 in it. And the first year I had it, it cost me $250 in parts, because I had a deal worked out with the mechanic. I just helped him insulate his house he was building at the time, and kind of worked off the labor. Then the next year I moved to Bozeman, because that was in Kalispell, Montana. Then I moved to Bozeman, Montana. And this was like a legit flight, you know, mechanic shop. And he went through everything, and man, he found a lot more stuff. There was, holy crap, it was a cracked tail bulkhead. They had to tear the whole tail apart. The engine had two cylinders, failed compression, so took the jugs off, and the piston rings fell on the ground when we pulled the jug off.
Wow.
It was like a Volkswagen.
Did you fly it there?
I flew it 150 hours that year.
Nice.
That year.
It's the best when they come in and you find something like that, and they're like, oh, what's up with that one? It's like, this is your airplane. Like, what?
I still have that piston. It's still on my desk.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
I saw it.
Yeah, I've seen that.
I saw it. Yeah.
The piston, like, what happened to that?
Where the ring, you know, the ring groove on the piston. There's like three or four of them.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Three up high, one down low. The oil. And then it was, the ring was actually doubled up inside itself, inside that one top ring groove.
Wow.
And the actual cylinder was fine. It's a harder nickel metal than the softer aluminum piston.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it didn't damage it. The
actually worked as designed.
But the piston was tore up both sides. Oh, yeah. Man, all the way down was grooved, and like, holy crap.
I remember seeing that.
We did an overhaul on the whole thing. End overhaul. And,
yeah.
But anyway, so that was like $9,500.
It's crazy.
So it
went
from $250 to $95. Then the next year I had a muffler crack, which is a big deal. I was $1,500.
Sure, your muffler bearings are bad.
Then I ran out of blinker fluid.
Yeah. Had to buy a bucket of rotor wash.
Yeah, rotor wash. Yeah, I remember that one.
It's prop wash for
Yeah. Sir, I got to pump a bucket of AIR in this thing. And it's going to cost you extra.
Yeah. Oh, love it though. Yeah.
Yeah. I found so many of those mufflers bad. It's just, those are mandatory though, if there's any leak, just because that's where you get your heating inside the cabin. So if you have a leak in your muffler, you're going to give yourself carbon monoxide poisoning.
Oh, that's not a problem.
So yeah, you just take a nap and
crack a window. Take a
nap. Yeah. The forever nap.
I feel so sleepy.
Just smoke, put a little epoxy on that crack. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
No.
Smoke a cigar, a little duct tape.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's got to be the heat.
Muffler wraps. Yeah. You can buy those through Vance and Hines.
Yeah. There's a good YouTube video out there somewhere on how to.
Yeah.
Redneck airplane maintenance.
That's right. That's right.
.com.
Scooter.
Just open the window.
That's right. 100 mile an hour air purge. Mm-hmm. Oh man, what a bunch of good stuff, dude. It's interesting to me, to the whole maintenance protocol, you know what I mean? And as you learn through it, because each shop, like there's, what is there, 5 shops, I think?
You're talking in the Marine Corps?
Yeah, at least on helicopters. Yeah,
airframes,
right?
Airframes, avionics, ordnance,
flight equipment, flight line.
Yep. So it's 5.
And then maintenance control, it's kind of their own thing.
Yeah, I got sent there for a year, and that kind of sucked. I got my say for flight though. So, well, they made a new requirement. They were tired of people sending their not great people to maintenance control. So they're like, you know what?
Yeah.
New requirement. You have to be a CDQAR to be safe for flight and in maintenance control. So now I'm there with 3 other sergeants. We're all flyers, so we all have wings, and we're all CDQARs. And I'm like, wow, I feel like underused right now. Just kind of sitting here.
Yeah, it's a good thing. And then there's the tool room. Then there's the whole upstairs admin shop. It's pretty cool, man. A squadron is pretty fantastic. When you were talking through your deployment on the Mew, so I was the opposite of that. So we deployed to Okinawa, same thing, and did UDP. Well, the second UDP, when we were getting ready to deploy, we had a workup to the Mew, and half our shop would go, blah, blah, blah. The other sergeant, the other CDQAR in my shop, we flipped a coin and he went on Mew.
I went
back to Okinawa. So back to Okinawa, second Iraq war started. We got extended. I joined the 31st Mew.
Okay.
I was like, all right, let me get off the rock.
Oh, no.
And we hopped on the 31st Mew and we were supposed to go to all those cool places like you just named. Oh, we're going to go, blah, blah, blah. And there was a bombing in Bali and we didn't get off the ship for months.
Dang.
We circled. We call it the Oki 500, dude.
Yep. People call that Mew the 30 worst.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
It was like jail with work.
That's and being on ship is tough.
Barbecue, Lay's, potato chips.
Mm. Yep. Yeah. The food. Yeah, that's a whole lifestyle right there. Being on the ship. But I tell people, it sucks at first. But you learn to love it. It's kind of like a long camping trip with your friends, kind of thing. But I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it more. But I mean, you're in coffin racks that are 4 high. You got 60 people per berthing. I had, I think, 4 toilets, 2 showers for that many people. You know, you got go up to the mess deck to get food, and some, especially on like mid shift, sometimes it's like, oh, you can have 1 sliver of chicken and some crunchy rice. That's all we got today. And it's like, what?
Huh?
So sometimes the food was amazing. Sometimes it was really bad.
Hmm.
I could talk all day about the ship.
No kidding.
Oh no, they do have 3 full meals. I'm just saying, when you're on mid shift though, and you like go up at like, you know, 2 a.m. and they didn't care to prepare food or whatever, or all they had left over was this, so they just kind of heat up some nastiness, and you're like, wow, this is depressing.
You know what's crazy is I remember a comment my dad made back in the day. He said that from his dad, they were all Navy boys, and he said, you know, when he joined, it was the Korean War.
Okay.
And so his deal was, well, you always get a hot meal on a ship.
Mm-hmm. Wait, hang on, Dave. He's a badass is what that is. Sorry. All bullshit really? Aside, he is a badass. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Go ahead, please.
He was on a destroyer, the Henderson, USS Henderson. And, you know, he'd tell me a few stories here and there. But on the food side, that's what his deal was. Well, you'll always get a hot meal and you're not stuck with MREs and different things like the Army or the Marines. So, but if you don't have any food, I guess no food is
not as good either.
Yeah, the mid-rats, look out.
Yeah.
All the mid rats so guys the, out the there, they know.
Graveyard workers, basically.
Yeah, the graveyard. Yeah, they know. Right. They
get
show
a hot
up.
Meal, you get a hot cup of chata.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was hit or miss. Shut the hell up and get back to your bunk.
Yeah, we get to work.
Oh, man. And I mean,
yesterday's coffee.
Getting woken up for like man overboard drills and stuff, too. Mm. Oh, man. Because, I mean, and on the ship, they have something called, it's called the 1MC, but it's just a giant microphone that is plumbed to every hatch, every room, everywhere. And it's, you know, 20,000 decibels higher than it should be, but you know, you have different things.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. And so the Navy, they practice because, I mean, that is what they do. They're deployed to a ship. Their job is to protect the ship or, you know, whatever their specific job may be, but they have all these code words and stuff that they say to where, you know, you have to go run to your battle station. You have to do this or that. And, but yeah, the one that we all had to participate in was the man overboard drill. And you get a full accountability of an entire ship. And our time limit was 8 minutes. So roughly 1500 people need to be accounted for in 8 minutes. So when you first start it, you know, it's 30 minutes, 35, and it gets down to the point where you can, no kidding, like just the leadership and talking, you know, you got 10 people that talk to one person, that person talks to this other guy, you know, chain of command, but you get it down. But yeah, you could, whatever you're doing, if you're sudsed up in the shower and man overboard, you're just like, oh my God, throw a towel on. And people are walking out like flip flops and covered in soap still. And it's like, all right, man, you're good. Go back to your bunk. But, and those are drills, of course, but
good times.
Yeah.
Wow.
That is cool.
So it's just a head count. You have to make sure.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. That's all it is.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, see who's missing, try to identify down the... It's a big deal.
So what happens if you do have a man overboard? Like,
so we...
Someone took the bet and...
Yeah.
I lost the bet, whatever.
Oh, man, I'm sure there's so many stories.
Overboard.
Yeah.
They don't, like, stop. Do they just throw out a dinghy?
So they actually have... There's a giant crane, and we have small boats that are in a certain area of the ship, and the crane literally pull. I mean, I say little ships or little boats, but I mean, they're full on diesel powered, you know, pretty decent rigs, but they pick them up with a crane and they set them out into the water,
right,
and they have a crew go recover you. But no, the ship, okay, they'll practice. I mean, they turn really sharp and they circle you or whatever and make sure to stay close and keep eyes on you. And it's funny. They have someone called, they call it out. They go, shark watch. And there's literally a guy that goes out there with like a M1 carbine style gun, and his literal job is to shoot at sharks if they come by whoever's in the water. And that is that is a job. I'm not even kidding. Not maybe not an MOS, but there is a shark watch guy, and he will shoot at sharks if they come near you.
It's a billet. Hopefully he's a good shot.
Yeah. Well,
that sounds like a job for like a Thompson submachine gun. Or
oh jeez.
No sights. Yeah.
Jump on Mark 9.
Yeah.
We don't have a man overboard anymore.
Yeah, we're
you sunk.
But we get his lunch. Shark too.
Sweet, we just freed up a sandwich.
Yeah. That extra piece of chicken's mine.
Yeah,
that's right. Crunchy rice.
Medium rare chicken and crunchy rice.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Every once in a while, it's not always that bad, but
yeah, a little Tabasco on everything.
Oh, hot sauce. They are loaded up with hot sauce on the ship. Everything just tastes the same. And then you're like, well, Cholula today.
Dude, we had a...
Cholula or Tapatio? Which one is it?
I'm going to be honest. All they had on this one was Texas Pete something or another. Texas Pete Sriracha. That's what it was. That's the only kind that they had. So it got pretty old pretty quick.
We had some people get NJP'd because they built a tear gas bomb out of an MRE heater and a bunch of hot sauce.
That sounds like
some in the birthing area.
That's some Marine shit right there.
Holy cow. And, that's awesome.
They got like NJP'd, dude. It was a big deal.
Well, what's NJP'd for the half of us that
don't
speak?
So non-judicial punishment. So they got busted down a rank and fined and all kinds of stuff. Because they threw it was like a 2-liter bottle, and they put the MRE heater in there with a little bit of hot sauce, and they're liquid activated, right? So they capped it and they threw it in the berthing area, and when it exploded, all of the tear gas from the hot sauce filled the entire ship because it's like one system, right? It was a big deal. Like, that was fun.
Yeah, don't do that in the sub.
Yeah. Sub would be horrible. But yeah, good times, man.
Emergency surface, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's crying.
That's when you see that Hunt for Red October come out of the water, right? Like, woo. Dang.
Yeah, then you have a man overboard.
Yeah, exactly. It's not NJP anymore. Now it's man over MLB.
That's right. That's right.
Forget the NJP. We're MLB in this SOB.
Yeah, feeding him to the sharks.
Add some acronyms.
All these military acronyms.
Put him in the torpedo tube. Oh, good times, man. So 5 years then. You did five? I did five. Yeah. Yeah, same. So they...
You got out E5, Sergeant?
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually promoted to E5 just before my four-year mark. So I was an E5 my entire last year.
Yeah, I was similar. I think, what was I? I think I promoted to E5 at like 3.5, maybe a little bit more. 3.5 years is when I got promoted to E5.
Yeah, I was right about 4. Because I picked up corporal meritoriously through a board.
Oh, good for you.
And I picked up... PFC meritoriously.
Dang, overachiever over here.
Not really. I just swabbed the deck. Clean the bathrooms.
I think people are surprised. Yeah, it's like, oh man, is it hard, the military? And it's like, honestly, if you just are not a drunk and you show up to work, like, you're going to be better than, you know, 50%. So literally just show up.
It's just like life.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, dude, just show up, try to do a good job and don't be an ass and don't be a drunk. And it's like, oh, okay.
That applies to the civilians too.
Yeah.
Gosh, we talk about that a lot, don't we?
We do. And there's real merit in that. You know, everybody, like the idea of overnight success is so sure. I mean, who doesn't want that, right? Like on paper, if you could be a millionaire tomorrow, but if you don't learn the lessons to get there and you don't earn your way, like you're not going to stay there. So it's the same thing. You know, it's you put in your time, you put in your effort, you pay your dues, you work your way up. So that way, when you become a leader, you actually know what everybody below you is supposed to be doing and how to help them. If you're promoted to a leadership position and you don't know anything about the people below you and what they're doing, how do you lead? But that mentality is getting erased through social media and Instagram and nonsense and, you know, the whole overnight success stuff.
Well, just the culture nowadays, people want to start at the top. They don't want to start. This is the new millennials and whatnot, and they don't want to work their way up. They want to know, I got this degree, I need to start here.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, what qualifies you for that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, think of that. If you're flying in a plane, even if you're not flying the plane and you're flying in a plane or another aircraft or even your vehicle, if the person working on it was just promoted to head maintenance dude because he walked through the door yesterday, no one would want that, but the workforce wants that, right? So it's kind of this weird upside down balance in life. And there's a lot of good that comes from working your way through the positions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, 100%. You touched on some of that with money. I mean, how many people are playing the lottery because they don't want to work and they want that instant $1 million or $2 million? And guess what happens to most of those people?
Yeah, it doesn't.
They are freaking broke in 4 or 5 years. They have nothing.
They got a million problems.
Yeah.
Well, that's why the credit card debt and just debt in general is going up, right? Because, you can't. You're not happy living on what you're making. You want to live on more. So you go, we have to put that on the credit card, all right?
Yeah, especially with my generation. I mean, I'm younger, I'm 27, but a lot of my friends and stuff, extremely materialistic, you know what I mean? Like the big house, the big truck, and then you kind of go through that yourself and looking at the expenses. And we were talking about housing prices earlier, but I look around and I'm like, how do people afford this? Like even when we were in New Mexico, like I feel like I made, you know, good money, especially for my age. I was like, okay, doing good. And our mortgage was nothing, you know? 170 for a house compared to out here, it's like 350. But yeah, even then, it's not like I looked at my savings account and been like, man, look at how much extra money I have. You know what I mean? I see the people out here and I'm like, what do you do for work, man? This is, you're either broke or you're making it somehow.
Mm-hmm. Their debt.
Good on them if they're making it. But yeah, I feel like it's just debt.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, and it's not that different. You know, we were talking about that too, you know, thinking back through, you know, the first house that I bought. Out of the military, got out working on a rig, making good money. And it was the same way, you know, like buying a home. And I think I paid $137,000 for my first home.
Wow.
And it was brand new. I bought the land, had it built, and all that stuff.
Oh, and, you said 137,000.
Yeah,
brand new.
Yep,
good for you. Good for you.
And at the time, you know, in Vernal, Utah, at the time, I'm like, that's a ton of money. You know, $100,000. Oh my God, am I going to pay for this? Yeah. And it just never ends. You know, so you, like Dwayne said, you just have to take. I think that that's the thing you learn through life, through trial and error, with a little time, is you learn that, you know, there's certain things you just have to figure out. And it's not pretty, but as long as you're figuring it out, you know, you're winning. It's tough, and it's not getting easier, right? Because the more money that gets printed and wasted, and it just, the cost goes up. Yep. And insurance and property tax. I mean, we go on and on. We do go on and on about that a lot. So try not to drag us into that. My bad. But, you know, for those out there that are in that boat, you know, and you're in your mid 20s or early 30s or even your 40s, and you're looking at life like, man, if you just put one foot in front of the other and start building that foundation, you know, if you don't start today, what are you waiting for? You know, because it never gets better unless you start.
Yeah, so
I think that's kind of the main thing. Yep. But it's going to take time. You know, it doesn't happen overnight, man. I mean, Thinking back through like what we did, you know, imagine the process and all the stuff that we were dealing with our work there for a period of time. And if all of us didn't work our way through all those different pieces and parts, like, how would we have done what we did? Because we had a very lean team, and if you didn't know how to a different analogy, if you didn't know how to turn the wrench, the truck would have never went anywhere, because we didn't have that many people.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep,
it's true.
So it's pretty cool, man. Pretty cool. But go into all kinds of Marine Corps stories and bore you all to death.
I know. I'm like talking. I'm like, okay, I need to chill out. I'm like getting all amped up. I'm like, oh, dude, so many stories.
That's what we're here to do, man, is talk.
Yeah.
That's good. Give everybody a little shot of Marine Corps life. It's cool, man. There's a lot of, it's fun to see for me, you know, being out now for 20. Wow. I've been out now for 20.
Yeah. What year did you get out?
I got out in 2003.
2003?
Wow.
Yeah, 21 years ago.
Dang.
20, coming up on 22 years now.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see, though. You know what I mean? Like, in our youngest son, Jaden, is in the Marine Corps. He's 2 years in. He's a mortarman.
Oh, very nice.
He's in 29 Palms, and he's getting ready to deploy to Okinawa in April. So he's a little bit different than we were.
Yeah.
But it's cool to see that, you know, every generation has those. So when people are – I get a little pissed off when people want to – bad mouth generations, when there are a lot of examples of some really exemplary Americans and other people joining the military and stepping up and filling that role.
Yep. Absolutely.
I mean, that happens. Like Dave said, his dad, like people in those generations that were drafted or volunteered for service during a conflict in time, like the Korean War, my highest respect.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, people don't understand that at all.
Right. And to see people, I mean, people are filling the ranks. I think the Marine Corps is one of the only branches that's not struggling to fulfill its recruiting needs.
Oh, really?
Oh.
I believe so. So yeah. People are wanting to step up and be the few, the proud.
Yeah, absolutely.
Best of the best.
I think so.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think so.
A little biased, though. I don't know if that's
a lot of crayon eaters out there.
Yeah.
Just give him a machine gun.
Yeah, you can beat us for 5 years and let us play for an hour and a half, and we'll call it even.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are smarter.
We win.
You can't be smart. You got to be tough, right? Something like that.
No, it's crazy, too, because when you were talking about how generations, you know, how a lot of them are different, but you're saying dudes that are joining like Marine Corps and stuff like that, like it's still there. And when I talk to other people who are in the Marines, and their first question is like, oh, what's it like now? And I kind of like talked to, and my dad retired. He did 20 years. He was a drill instructor, recon. He did all the go fast stuff. And people always ask me like, oh, what's it like now? And I'm like, honestly, it's nothing different. Like I talk with my dad, you know, I'm sure boot camp is probably a little bit more rough, but I mean, it's still the same high pace, you know, no emotion from them. You never see them eat. You never see them drink. You never see them sleep for the drill instructor side. And I mean, it honestly hasn't really changed that much. Just talk with my dad and my grandpa. And yeah, so it's pretty cool with the Marine Corps on that aspect.
You know, it's nice to hear this because, you know, some of the what we see from our new woke military, there are a lot of good men out there.
Absolutely.
There's some weirdos and some people that do not belong. They just don't.
Yeah.
And there's no place for all this shoving into the woke piece. And that's a whole nother rabbit hole. But anyway, it's nice to hear that there are some good fellas.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the Air Force was kind of, because I worked with the Air Force for a little bit as a civilian. And unfortunately, I did see some of that woke stuff. And I mean, that was just getting accepted and everything. And it was getting pretty crazy. And so when I was, and even seeing like some of the grooming standards, and this is, I got out in 2020 and I'm seeing some of the air, I don't know if it's a Air Force Marine Corps difference or if it's a time difference. I think it's a branch difference, but grooming standards and some of the woke stuff that you're talking about that are just on like home pages and stuff. And I'm like, I think we're forgetting the task at hand here, guys. Like, I don't, you know, if you want to do that, go ahead. But this is, you're in the military right now. Mm-hmm. This is the Air Force. So yeah, it's unfortunate.
Mm. Yeah. I don't want to beat on the Air Force, dude.
But I don't.
But I will. So, dude, like when I was in, we used to go to Kadena.
Okay. Yeah.
Air Force Base. Yep. Right. Cause we got tired of our cockroach infested chow hall.
Exactly. There.
And we'd go up and eat good food, right? So you'd show up at the Air Force Base. Now, mind you, this is the Air Force Base. This is their base. This is their chow hall. This is their stuff. And we'd show up and we'd be in there eating their food. And they'd come, you'd see airmen come in and they'd be unshaven and like their camis would look like they just pulled them from underneath a bag and wadded them up and threw them on barely. And we're just like, get a haircut, you nasty son of a, like just ripping them. And like the whole time, you know, you'd walk out and after a couple of years I got out, I'm like, man, that was their base and we sat up there like assholes. No wonder why they don't like us.
Well, it's funny because we always talk on them like that, but then we're all like, dude, should have joined the Air Force, man.
We were just mad.
Yeah, exactly. we were just grumpy. Mad.
You know, I will say now what my other son-in-law is in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. I've never seen him leave the house like that.
Oh, no. Yeah. So, and there's some studs in there that are actually, you know, keeping up the traditions.
They're real.
Looking clean cut.
The Marine Corps has them too, dude. It's-
yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. What are they slipping through the crack? You know, some of them just slip through the crack. They get stuck in an office too long and they're not shown in front of other people. So they can kind of just do their own thing. And it's unfortunate.
Now, mind you, if the Air Force guys were coming to our chow hall, they probably would have looked a little better because they were on our turf, but they weren't coming to eat our food.
Yeah.
Now, you know, they're like, I'll eat the gum off the bottom of a table before I eat your chow, you nasty suckers.
But even like the establishments, like the chow hall and stuff on the grooming standard thing, when I was working with the Air Force, obviously they working on their base, they've got a chow hall and everything like that. And a commissary and whatnot. Obviously I had those privileges out of CAT card, whatnot. So I would go in there and I remember when I first started working there, I'm like very careful. I'm like, hey, are these shoes okay? Am I allowed to wear shorts in here? Like, I can't wear my hat, right? And this dude's like, you know, he'd never been in the military, but he was working contracting with me. He's like, no, dude, it's just going to a store. And I'm like, in the Marine Corps commissary, you walk in the commissary without a shave, someone's going to stop you and be like, hey, man, go try again. What? Look at your face.
Yeah.
Try again.
Oh, that's awesome.
Or flip flops or whatever. So it is extremely strict. And even in like,
you get no breaks.
In Djibouti, the naval, that base is ran by the Navy. And so in their chow hall, it is, you know, no hats, clean shave. You know, your hair can't be a mess. You know, you got to be, what was it, proper civilian attire. You got to have a belt on if you have belt loops on your pants. It's just, it's a whole thing. And so it's funny when I went to the Air Force side of it, they're like, nah, man, just come on in. And I'm like, this is cool.
Yeah, just leave your tray on the table. We'll clean it up.
Yeah, don't worry. Don't worry about it.
The whole time we're like, you nasty suckers, this is cool. Such good food, like licking your fingers.
Oh, yeah.
Food was so much better, dude.
Yes, it is. Oh, man. I don't care what anybody says. There's a difference, I'll tell you right now.
Yeah, I was just mad because I wasn't smart enough to join the Air Force.
To be fair, though, I remember looking back at Pendleton, I was talking with someone probably about 29 Palms or something. And 29 Palms, if you're stationed there, especially 29 Palms is where a lot of groundside guys are. So it's like they're not having the best time because they're in a desert, stupid hot in the summer, pretty dang cold in the winter, but they work outside, you know? So it's like They go out streams. In the field, and I mean, they're just living under a tarp. So yeah, they don't like that area because it's terrible weather as far as the heat and whatnot. But Camp Pendleton, I enjoyed Camp Pendleton. Looking back, I remember I was mad because I was in California. I grew up on 40 acres in the middle of nowhere, and I go to California. But Camp Pendleton, very nice place. Base, chow hall. They've even got like drive-through chow halls, lots of good restaurants. So yeah, I was happy at Camp Pendleton.
Yeah, Pendleton was a great escape from California.
Yes, it was. Actually. And we lived on base too. And I'm happy that we did because it wasn't as busy. California's scary with how much traffic, and it is a busy place. Southern California.
People on top of people everywhere. Yeah. It's a lot. It's hard to imagine that they're going to power all that with solar and wind.
Oh, is that the plan now?
But hey, well,
another topic.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I'm trying to divert us into
reset the clock.
Yeah, my bad.
No, you're good.
Add another hour to the clock, would you?
Yeah, at least. Well, man, dude. Good to have you. Thanks for service.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank both of you. Yeah. Awesome. That was fun.
Yeah.
Now, I guess cigar rating time on my A game, man. Look at that. I'm remembering.
That's good.
Dave, this cigar, buddy. This is a AJ Fernandez that Dave gave me. This is a pretty good one, man. Mm-hmm. Smooth. Good. I'd give this sucker an 8.
Ooh.
I would.
And this one.
Sorry, we should have told you the game before we ambushed you.
Yeah, I'm new to the cigar thing. I'm like pulling the wrapper out of the ashtray. We got to
give you a Colorado cigar.
Rocky Patel. I like it. It is easy. I'm going to go with a 7 for it. I wished it had a tasty outer.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Tabac E special.
Oh man.
Super sweet. I mean, it's got a good taste to it.
Good flavor.
Really good flavor. I didn't you got to slice it a little deeper than I thought. I had to kind of bite into it a little bit because at first I was like, man, it's not smoking. My glue's sucking on it. And then I cracked into it. I'm like, oh,
there you go.
I wasn't getting a airflow. But no, really good. I would say probably a 9.
Ooh.
The Tabacs are tough to beat.
Yeah. I think Tabacs are the whole reason we're smoking cigars.
It honestly. Is. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. Dalton?
I think this one is, what is that? Oliva? Oliva?
Oh, Oliva.
Oliva?
Oliva? Yeah.
Series G. Or Siri G. And I don't smoke cigars very much, so the conversation and everything, I thought was excellent. So I'll go with a 9. And it's square shaped, so it doesn't roll around. So that's kind of nifty.
Then roll away.
Nifty. Yeah, yeah,
like it's like a square flashlight. You set it down, you're like, oh, nice. And roll away from you.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's a little
except
things.
For when you go put the batteries in. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
An e-cigar. I like that. Yeah.
The e-special. Yeah, yeah.
E-special.
Yeah. Well, on that note, man, check us out. Again, Podbean across all the apps, Spotify, you name it. We are everywhere on all the apps. We're getting downloads on apps that I haven't specifically put us into. So they're cross bouncing. It's pretty cool, man.
It's awesome.
Things are growing. Check us out. If you have any comments, if you are a fellow crayon eater and you want to jump in on the conversation, man, email us, AmericanDudocracy@gmail.com. We're happy to hear. And we even give the love to the Air Force, Bubbas. We like all the military. We'll talk smack. It's kind of like a family, right? You'll beat up on your little brother. But if someone else wants to step in, they better get in line.
So, I like it.
Well, that being said, boys.
Right on.
Cheers.
Till next time.
Bye-bye.